At the launch of her presidential campaign, Heather Humphreys described how she aims to be a bridge between communities if elected to Áras an Uachtaráin.
I've always sought to break down barriers and to reach out that hand of friendship.
She also recalled attending Orange parades and admitted that her husband had been a member of the Orange Order. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And of course, there was a bit of an awkward exchange between the media and Heather Humphreys and her husband over their relationship with the Orange Order.
Not that I'm aware of. No, he's not. You'd have to ask him that. But no, he's not a member.
Today, we're finding out all about the history of the Orange Order in the Republic. What is the Orange Order and what became of its presence here? Well, I'm delighted to be joined by historian, Orangeman and unionist Quincy Dugan, who is going to answer some of our questions. Quincy, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Good morning, Ciara.
So I think, to be honest, Quincy, some people would have been surprised, particularly those in the Republic of Ireland, to hear that there were Orange lodges and Orange units in the Republic. I would imagine that Heather Humphreys' husband would have been a member of the order that was in Monaghan. So tell me about their presence in the Republic today.
Just to give you a wee bit of background, Ciara, perhaps isn't realised that since the inception of Orangeism, every single county of Ireland had an Orange presence of some level. Some of it was quite considerably. By 3 years after Orange Institution was formed, which was 1795, by 1798, there were lodges already in every county and offshoots of overseas, of course. At that time, the only ones missing were Mayo, Clare and Kerry, but even those counties managed to get it. If we talk about a peak in the 1850s, 1860s, 1870s, we have as many as 10,000 Orange men in the counties of the Republic. There were 4,000 Orange men in Dublin in 1884. Now, without going into some more of the other history and diversifying, I suppose, the different events that took place pre, during and post-partition saw a substantial decline. But today, we still have Orange lodges based, of course, in Donegal, Cavan and Monaghan, the obvious ones. We also have Orange lodges in County Leitrim, and we also have a large Orange presence in Dublin City. From those lodges, they recruit a membership that, a wee tally after a few phone calls yesterday, Orangeism in the South has members that cover across 19 counties outside of Ulster.
Okay, so you mentioned that there's lodges in Leitrim, in Dublin, in Donegal, and a few others, but you say they take their membership from 19 counties in total. Is that in the Republic or right across the island?
Most of the Donegal membership is from Donegal. Most of the Monaghan membership is from Monaghan. Most of the Cavan membership is from Cavan, with a few exceptions. The Leitrim lodges, the Dublin Lodge, they have members recruited from right across the whole Republic of Ireland. And there are a few Republic of Ireland members in some of the Northern Lodges as well.
And can you put a figure on the membership at this point?
Within the Republic of Ireland jurisdiction, we have Orange Lodges that are in the Republic of Ireland, but they work underneath banners or jurisdictions in Northern Ireland. For example, the biggest Orange Lodge in the Newtown Hamilton district of County Armagh is actually sits in Monaghan. There's a whole district of the City of Londonderry Orange Lodge that consists of North Donegal. So the numbers are clouded a wee bit because of what jurisdictions they're under. But you're probably talking in around or close to 1,000 active Orange men in the Republic.
Let's go from the very beginning here. You mentioned 1795, which is when the Orange Order was established. What was the reason? What was the catalyst for that?
Orangeism as a concept, if you like, comes directly from the Glorious Revolution and the outpourings of it. The Glorious Revolution was deemed by particularly the Protestant community of Ireland, to have delivered such concepts as there was suddenly stability in the country. There was a concept of freedom that was delivered. There was a concept of civil rights that was delivered. So because this was William of Orange as the figurehead, the word Orange became a byword for those concepts. So to be Orange or celebrate all things Orange and Orangism came to be to mean a descriptor, if you like, for stability and freedom and civil and religious liberty. So really from 1688, there are people on the island of Ireland who consider themselves to be commemorating and celebrating and a part of Orangism. And there's many different Orange organisations, believe it or not, right through the early 1700s. Now, the Orange institution that we have today, the Orange Institution of Ireland, well, it was formed in 1795. A whole new set of social and economic and religious and political factors all came together basically to constitute Orangism underneath a new banner.
And you talk about the Glorious Revolution there, and you talk about the Protestant King William of Orange. He, of course, defeated the Catholic King James at the Battle of the Boyne in July 1690. But it was 100 years later, 105 years later, that the order was founded. So who founded it and why was it founded at that point?
Well, it's important to say that this particular offshoot of it was founded, but there was an Orange organisation in Dublin before William of Orange ever set foot in Ireland. You know, the Aldermen of Skinner's Alley. We have the Boyne Societies, we have the Old Boyne Societies, Boyne Clubs, you know, so we have different versions of it always existed. And in 1795, well, I suppose the pivotal event is said to be the Battle of the Diamond that took place in Loughgall, County Armagh. That really was the pinnacle of a series of smaller fracas, substantially rose out of political and economic instability that took on a different communal footing.
It ended up, as you said, in the Battle of the Diamond, and I think 30 Catholics were actually killed in that particular battle. And the organisation's mascot bears the name Diamond Dan.
The main place of that this arose was at the inn of a man called Don Winter. The Diamond Dan thing was like a wee cartoon character, like a mascot that came about relatively recently. But Don Winter and James Sloan, two of the most pivotal figures in those early days.
And what was the process by which a person joined the Orange Order? Was anybody and everybody accepted?
Well, the Orange Order was like any organisation that exists. It formed then and it forms now a specific role for a specific sort of demographic of people. It was exclusively a Protestant body, but there were certain, whenever the Act of Union that became about, you know, the unionism and politics soon became very much entwined. Now, I suppose when we get onto the current debate, if you like, well, what is Orangism today? How do you join today? Well, in the Republic of Ireland, what we have seen is that a lot of people have searched it out. They've searched out Orangism because they feel an affinity with it, or they've found a deep-seated family membership with it.
And when did you join yourself, Quincy?
I joined relatively late in this part of the world. It was into my 20s a bit, so I'm 51, so I'm 26, 27 years done. You find in my part of the world, Orangism is now bigger than it's ever been in the whole of history. In the small town of Market Hill, population of about 1,500 people, and the district, there are over 560 Orange men across 12 different Orange lodges.
And when you joined, I mean, do you have to swear any allegiance? Do you have to commit to marching in parades? Do you have to agree to meet once a week? What exactly is expected of you if you are a member?
Well, I suppose there's two parts of this. You know, there's the theoretical, you know, there's the ceremonial and the symbolic. So, yeah, there is a ceremony, if you like, something that's been handed down over hundreds of years, a symbolic ceremony and with different aspects in it relating to biblical episodes. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. A lot of this stuff is online, you know, and you are, you know, you're pledging yourself. You're asserting, I would suppose, and underlining the faith aspect of a belief in the faith aspect and the determination to maintain that faith aspect of the Orange Institution. And beyond that, there's no mention of parading, there's no mention of marching and anything else to do with joining the Orange Institution. You know, that aspect is a largely ceremonial and symbolic one. Orangeism today is very much a community-orientated organisation. In truth, it always has been. You know, it's a place for people to come together of a shared world perspective, if you like, of a shared view of history, of a shared heritage, of a shared religion, to come together in a way that they feel safe and can celebrate.
And how often do you come together? How often do you meet?
Most Orange Lodges meet once a month, and then there tends to be a whole range of social and ceremonial, I suppose, aspects and events around that as well. You know, typical in an Orange calendar as well, first and foremost, is the 12th of July, the celebration of the Battle of the Boyne, the day when almost every Orange man is out marking that occasion. Secondly to that, most lodges participate in some sort of Orange service every year. So a Church of Ireland or a Presbyterian or a Methodist service that really is only celebrating the 12th anniversary or 12th of July anniversary or some other anniversary. And then beyond that, we have, you know, the usual community group type exploits, dances and educational evenings and, you know, nights and clubs for senior citizens and events for children, nights at the races. Very, very common stuff that you would see across any sporting or social club in the whole of the island.
And you said now you feel that it is growing in popularity. What are the numbers like at this point in Northern Ireland?
Well, Orangeism today, well, first of all, it's going through quite a large upsurge at the minute, Ciara. Approximately, whenever the returns, this is the time of the year for returns, whenever the Orange Lodge will make a list of all of their current members, any members who have passed away or resigned or suspended for not paying dues, and any new members that have been brought on the books, all of that's compiled and sent to Belfast to tally up. And it looks like it's going to be up considerably this year. Membership across Northern Ireland and the Republic is circa about 35,000 members.
And it would have been at a peak, I suppose, around the 1960s. It would have had about 90,000 members. So it has come down significantly, I suppose, since then, although you say you feel that it's on the rise. Why do people leave the order, Quincy?
What's important to say, though, on, you know, I hear it every July, early July, you know, oh, the death toll of the Orangeism. Look at it. It's getting smaller and smaller. It's nearly dead. It's going to be dead soon. The headline, Ciara, is not that the numbers are smaller than they once were. The headline is that this is a folk organisation that clings and holds very strongly values and a value system that's deemed by some to be very much a thing of the past. Other organisations such as the Hibernians, the Foresters in Northern Ireland and the Rechabites in the Gardeners, etc., folk organisations, fraternities across the world, they're nearly all gone. Orangeism, through all of that, has held strong and is still here. That's the headline.
And you call it a folk organisation here. It's something that you say is about aligning politically with William of Orange, but much more than that. It's deeply ideological, it's spiritual for people. There will be a view amongst many nationalists here, particularly, I suppose, in the Republic, but of course in Northern Ireland also, that the Order is sort of an anti-Catholic organisation.
You know, it's no more anti-Catholic than the Catholic Church is anti-Protestant here. You know, it's an organisation that's specifically for one demographic, you know, it's pro-Protestant. It's not anti-anything. It is pro-Protestant.
And yet, would you feel that all of your members in the Republic, all 1,000 members in the Republic, are they comfortable with their membership? Are they vocal about their membership? Would their communities, which are probably largely Catholic communities, be aware of their membership of the Order?
You know, outside of areas of Donegal and Monaghan, not even in Cavan, you know, it's very difficult to be an orange man in the South. And, you know, it's, you know, the furor of a headline over Heather Humphreys has really demonstrated that, you know, orangism is still seen by many people as something that has an evil and an underhand undertone to it. You know, there's no doubt whatsoever. I personally know orange men throughout the Southern Ireland that they would tell me, you know, I can't publicly proclaim that I'm in the Orange Institution. It would harm me socially. It would harm me in my economic and my business life. There is a fear.
And yet, I thought it was interesting because I heard Eoin O'Brien, the Sinn Féin housing spokesperson, speaking on the radio. He was on Anton Savage's programme here on Sunday, actually, in News Talk. And he said, I'm surprised at the furore. Like, what do you expect? A Presbyterian living in a border county? Of course, they're going to be part of the Orange Order. And in fact, if we're going to talk about a united Ireland in this country, we have to talk about how we are going to respect other traditions and other cultures and orangism.
And those are lovely words from that gentleman, you know, and I have no doubt he does want to talk. But the Republic of Ireland, the civic society, the great and the good, sets it up as a place of tolerance. But, you know, whenever it comes to orangism, it's only tolerant of things that it agrees with, you know, and orangism is still demonized very, very highly. This latest episode and the absolute that could generate a headline in 2025, you know, add that to such events as the Glasnevin Wall, you know, that marked the death of everyone who died in the Easter Rising. Look at that, and it being removed, intolerable. The commemoration of the Royal Irish Constabulary, intolerable. Two high profile events added to this. There is no chance of a united Ireland ever happening. Not in my lifetime, not in anybody's lifetime, because there is insincerity.
You don't think there's any Southern politician here who represents the Orange voice, who has the sort of moral or cultural alignment that your members have?
It's not that I don't think there isn't. Simple as that. You know, when we talk about Heather Humphreys, you know, I was chatting to a couple of Cavan men, and we were sort of laughing at this idea that somehow Heather Humphreys is a part of the, or an enemy of the South because she's pro-Orange. We have never up here certainly deemed Heather Humphreys to be pro-Orange. At very best, ambivalent. She's certainly not an example for Orangism or Protestantism or Unionism in Northern Ireland. I suppose the phrase comes to mind, she's always tried to ride two horses, you know. She's tried to balance the books between her united Irish ideology and, oh, I have got orange ancestors, so I'm in the middle. No, she's not in the middle. She's trying to ride two horses and rides none of them.
We'll keep talking about orange men. Are there any orange women?
Yeah, orange. There's an orange, the Female Orange Institution of Ireland. Like the junior Orange institutions, it in particular has went through a massive upsurge in the past few years. And I suppose it's fair to say, Ciara, a lot of this is to do, you know, if we look at the psychology and anthropology and sociology, some of it's to do with coming out of COVID, you know, when people are searching for, you know, something to be a part of as well, you know, something that they can share. And the Women's Orange Institution, the Young Men's Orange Institution in particular, so that's under 16, and the Young Women's Orange Institution, they are very, very large at the minute and number thousands of members in their own right. There are over 100 young orange men, orange boys in Market Hill alone.
All right, Quincy Dugan, we're going to leave it there, but thank you for bringing your understanding of what it is to be a member of the Orange Order to us here on the News Talk Daily podcast today.
Thank you very much, Ciara. And, you know, I would encourage all listeners don't just listen to the sound bites. Don't just listen to the three words or the five words. Delve much deeper. And if you want to ask any questions, give me a shout on social media and I'll answer any question you want. And we're always looking more members.
You're giving a plug there. All right, Quincy Duggan, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you for your time today.
Cheerio. Thank you, Ciara.
Well, that's it from today's News Talk Daily. We'll be back in your feeds tomorrow. Don't forget to give us a like or a follow. But until then, take care. Bye-bye.